All right, Alexander, we have three news stories which I would like to discuss in this segment. Let's talk about Assange. Let's talk about Burisma and U.S. aid, Hunter Biden, Joe Biden. And let's talk about a possible spy exchange involving Paul Whelan, who was the ex-Marine that was sentenced to 16 years in Russia, 16 years in prison in Russia for spying. And let's start this off with Assange. I will read you a headline from the Sydney Morning Herald, which says, "Hacker, not journalist. Assange faces fresh allegations in the U.S. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange solicited hackers to break into the Icelandic government's computers and steal information that could be leaked to embarrass the government, according to a new Justice Department indictment. The superseding indictment announced on Wednesday does not contain additional charges beyond the existing 18 counts over his dealings with the former U.S. Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning. But prosecutors said they add evidence to the government's assertions that Assange is not a publisher or journalist, but a hacker." First of all, Alexander, shame on Sydney Morning Herald with that propaganda title. Yep. Hacker, not a journalist. Mm-hmm. Shame on them. He is one of your citizens. Mm-hmm. You should be supporting him, not burying him. So, they're just adding to their case that they're making, which is that he is he's not a publisher or a journalist. That's their main case, and this is just kind of BS that they're throwing out there to the media, so that they can continue to make that claim while Assange rots in a prison in London. Alexander, this is, once again, terrible news, and shame on the Trump White House, shame on the DOJ, shame on everybody, shame on the Obama White House, shame on all of them.
Absolutely, I completely agree. Now, can I just say, though, that I don't think it strengthens the case against Assange that the United States has brought against him in Britain. I think it weakens it. And can I just explain why? First of all, they say that it identifies Assange as a hacker, but they don't actually charge him with hacking. In fact, they don't even allege that he has actually committed hacking. They say that he was involved with people who were involved in hacking. Now, if you drill into the allegations, the specific allegations that are made in this indictment, they fall, it seems to me, into two parts. There's an allegation about Stratfor, which is an intelligence, a private intelligence consulting company that provides intelligence information and geopolitical analysis, which is, by the way, pretty good entity in some ways. I mean, I don't agree with a lot of what they do, but I mean, they're interesting. And it's absolutely the case that they were hacked in 2011. But we know all about that hack. We know exactly who was involved, and it was not Assange. And in fact, a lot of people who've looked into this allegation, which involves Stratfor isn't identified in the indictment as such, but it's pretty clear when you look at all the details that this is what this is all about. When you look at it, the person who has drawn up the indictment has got their chronology wrong. And in fact, it's quite clear that the hacks that they are discussing are completely unrelated to any work that Assange himself ever did or any contacts that he had. It is true that he published some of the material, but there's no indication that he actually solicited it through hacking. So already there are problems with this part of the superseding indictment. It can be factually proved without much difficulty that this part of the indictment doesn't really hold together very well. Now, the second part is even stranger because it is almost entirely based on the evidence, but as I understand it, it is entirely based on the evidence of a particular individual who briefly worked for WikiLeaks. He's not identified again in the indictment, but it's fairly well known who he is, that he's an Icelandic a young Icelandic person who came in and worked as a briefly for WikiLeaks. He was a deeply corrupt individual, a paedophile, a convicted paedophile, who's apparently got, you know, nine convictions for having sex with underage minors. And he's also a thief. And more importantly, he was also apparently, for some of the time at least that he was working for WikiLeaks, he was an FBI informer. So, you know, very dodgy source already. And it relates to contacts with a hacking group, of which the head of that hacking group, who's referred to as Sabu, by the way, the previous person is referred to as the teenager. This, the head of this hacking group is called Sabu. Well, it turns out that this man was also an FBI informer. So, in fact, it's all about, you know, two FBI informers talking to each other in a way that really rather suggests, and a point which many people are making, that this isn't, in fact, evidence of Assange actually working with hackers. It's a case of two FBI informers working together to fabricate a case against Assange for the FBI. So I don't think it actually helps the case against Assange at all, actually. And I'm going to say something. I think the British court will not be happy with this, you know, supplemental indictment. They will say, look, we're already going through the indictment that you've already produced, which makes all the various charges that it has. Why bring up this new indictment, which doesn't actually add any charges, and which is clearly intended to smear Assange, and doesn't do it very well? And I think that will lend credence to the point that Assange's lawyers are making, that this is a very politicized case and a very politicized extradition process. That's how it looks to me. So I think this is a mistake by someone, yeah. Actually.
I wish I could agree with you on that to a certain extent, but I mean, you're right,
yeah,
on all the points that you made, but I just see this as the British courts have already sentenced.
Well,
that's what I think. I also think that this has nothing to do with any legal issues at all. I think this was a complete media play, as evidenced in the Sydney Herald's title. I think this is just meant just for the media to distribute the narrative to everybody. Well, once again, he was a hacker. He was a hacker. He was a hacker. I think that's the point. It's simplistic what I'm saying, but
no, it's
that's
not
how
simplistic.
I read it.
It's not simplistic at all.
And I wish the courts looked at it like the way you're describing it, which is a fair way of judging it, but I just think
I'm going to say straight away, I think it's going to be difficult. I'm very, very pessimistic about the outcome of Assange's case in the Crown Court, the Westminster Magistrates Court, where the current extradition case is ongoing. I am mildly less pessimistic about it when it goes to the High Court, when there will be legal argument. And I think this superseding indictment, when I said that it will help him, I think it may help him at that level, because it really doesn't, as I say, add anything to the case against Assange. It weakens the case against Assange, and it does obviously make it look more political than I think the High Court will be comfortable with. That's the first thing. But that it is intended to foster this idea of Assange as a hacker, I completely agree with. And this indictment looks like it's primarily actually addressed to the media, saying to the media, look, you know, don't support this person. He's not one of you. He's a hacker. He's not like you. He operates in a completely different way. And I'm afraid there are lots of people in the media, in fact, most of the media, who will ride with that, because, to be very clear, the media is hostile against Assange. I still think it's a mistake, because I don't think the media was very sympathetic to Assange before this superseding indictment was produced anyway. So I think it's weakened the legal case without strengthening, if you like, the media case against Assange, because I don't think the media case against Assange needed strengthening very much. So I don't think this has really been a, I don't think this is a clever move by whoever was behind it. That's my own view anyway.
Two questions. Who's behind this smear? I mean, is it the DOJ? Is it the deep state? Is it the Trump White House? Who actually is behind this smear of Assange? This is my first one to say, okay, let's push a story out once again with the narrative that he is a hacker and not a publisher or a journalist. We want to get that out there. And number two is, don't you think this could be some sort of way to soften up the public? I mean, you're not going to win all the public over, but maybe once again, it's to soften up the public a little bit more because they know that the extradition is coming sooner or later. So they're going to start pushing out more and more smear jobs so that when the extradition does come and he does get shipped off to the U.S., say, I don't know, I'll throw a number out there, 50, 40, 50% of the public says, well, he was a hacker, not a publisher or a journalist. I mean, we know the media hates him. If there's one thing that the media can all agree on, and the Obama administration and the Trump White House and the DOJ and the deep state, if there's one thing that they all agree on, it's the fact that they want to get Assange.
I agree with that.
They want to take him down.
I entirely agree with that. I mean, I agree with that. I mean, it's clearly intended also to strengthen the idea that Assange is a hacker, which of course also brings in the, you know, let's not forget the Russiagate allegations, which are looking incredibly threadbare now with the admission from CrowdStrike that they were, you know, they're not quite sure that it was even a hack. So, I mean, then certainly that the Russians were behind it. So, but
that's why I'm asking, who's behind this from the U.S. side? Is it the Trump White House? Is it the DOJ? Is it the deep state?
I don't think it comes from the White House. I mean, it clearly is an indictment that's been produced by the DOJ, but obviously it's the intelligence community. Ultimately, it's the deep state, if you like, the intelligence community.
Yeah,
Barr has signed it up, but you remember Barr has a long history of work with the CIA. So I mean, you know, I am a great admirer of Barr as a jurist. I think he's done wonderful work on Russiagate, but you know, I'm not going to give him an absolutely, you know, blank check and say he's wonderful on everything. He's not been helpful to Assange at all, not at any time. And this is a case in point. I mean, he's clearly signed off on this indictment. I mean, I'm sure he knows all about it. I don't mean he's actually put his signature to it, but I mean, he clearly knows all about it and he's clearly let it go through. But the initiative for this is clearly coming from the intelligence community and primarily, I suspect, from the CIA.
All right. Okay, well, we'll continue to monitor this story and see how it plays out. Something's going on here. Something's going on.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's move over from Assange to some real criminals. Some real criminals. And that is Hunter and Joe Biden. And once again, Burisma. And this story unearthed by John Solomon from Just the News. Hunter Biden's Ukraine firm landed deal with USAID program while under corruption investigation. Burisma official who signed a 2014 deal was recently detained on alleged bribery plot in Ukraine and was publicly identified in 2014 British probe. Alexander, just a few months after Hunter Biden joined the board of Burisma Holdings, the Ukraine gas company landed a deal with an Obama administration renewable energy program that had been championed by one of his father's key vice presidential advisors. Newly released State Department memos show, what a surprise, the memorandum of understanding between Burisma and USAID's municipal energy reform project in Ukraine was signed in October 2014, according to a copy of the agreement attained by Just the News under Freedom of Information Act. At that time, Burisma was under very public investigations by both British government and the Ukrainian Prosecutor General's office and considered by the State Department to suffer from corruption issues. And the Burisma official who signed the MOU, Andrei Kitcha, was publicly identified in British court documents in 2014 as someone whose conduct was questioned during the probe. More recently, Kitcha was detained in Ukraine in what law enforcement authorities there said was a failed attempt to deliver a $6 million bribe to prosecutors designed to end continuing investigations of the controversial gas company. What a freaking mess. What a mess from the Bidens and Burisma and Ukraine, well, and all these guys.
Well, indeed. I mean, let's take a step back. You're USAID. You're going to invest money in Ukraine. I mean, why you would want to invest money in Ukraine is another matter. But, you know, you've decided to invest money in Ukraine. Money, which, let's remember, is U.S. tax dollars. I mean, they are the money that the USAID receives from the U.S., from the U.S. government, from Congress, which comes from taxes paid to the federal government by the people of the United States. So you're going to Ukraine, you're going to invest all these tax dollars, US tax dollars in Ukraine. Which company do you go to? You pick in the most corrupt country, possibly the most corrupt company. You go for the company which is under investigation in Britain, under investigation in Ukraine, the State Department is saying what a terrible company this is. There's memos about this in the State Department. There's memos about this in the embassy. And of course, that's the people you decide to partner with and to give all this money to. And you know, it's just chance, obviously. I mean, it's pure coincidence that the person who is on the board of directors of this, you know, exceedingly corrupt company just happens to be the vice president's son. I just chance. I mean, we mustn't look at make assumptions and whatever. Well, let us in fact make some assumptions, but not even assumptions. Let's go back to some of the things, Alex, which you have been saying on earlier programs when we have talked about not just Burisma, but about Ukraine, about how Ukraine is a laundry, how money, tax dollars from the United States, tax euros from Europe, but channeled into Ukraine, swirl around there and come straight back out. And along the way, they make certain people in the United States, in Europe, extremely rich, or, you know, very rich. This looks exactly like that. I mean, you know, that seems to be exactly the scenario we're looking here. So USAID pours the money into Ukraine. The money goes to Burisma. Burisma, which has, you know, used all its contacts and friends to get all of these investigations against itself dropped. It all that money ends up in a inflated salary for Hunter Biden, who we don't really know what he's doing, but seemingly he gets paid for all of this. And of course, some of it trickles back to the United States via Hunter Biden, who is, of course, the son of the Vice President Joe Biden. It's the revolving door of money. It's the money goes in and it goes out again. And that is exactly what we have just seen described here. Once again, John Solomon has done a brilliant job.
Yeah, and this kitchen guy tries to bribe prosecutors with $6 million to drop this the ongoing investigations. I mean, this whole thing. God, just get some people to investigate this thing. Barr, send some people over. This can't be that hard, Alexander, can it?
It cannot be. It absolutely
this
cannot.
This is a slam dunk. It's a slam dunk on Hunter Biden and Joe Biden.
Absolutely. Of course it is. I mean, I mean, clearly there is a huge amount of resistance and sensitivity to having this thing investigated, because let's be very clear. Hunter Biden and Joe Biden are not the only people who are involved in all of these activities in Ukraine. Lots of other people are, some of them Republicans, I've no doubt. So, I mean, clearly it's a sensitive and touchy subject. But, well, we've just outlined this scenario now. Remember, US tax dollars are involved. US tax dollars are involved. Surely this repays proper investigation. It's exactly what you said. Justice Department should be sending its people to Ukraine to ask all the right questions, interview all the right people, start any kind of proceedings that need to be started. After all, Paul Manafort was prosecuted on threadbare allegations, actually, of receiving money, corrupt money from Ukraine. I mean, he probably did receive corrupt money from Ukraine, only not the corrupt money that he was actually tried and prosecuted for, because it turns out that probably doesn't exist. That's another story. But, you know, if you go after Paul Manafort for corruption in Ukraine, you should be going after lots of other people. And clearly there is evidence here. We shouldn't be relying on John Solomon, who is, after all, a journalist, to do the work that the Justice Department should be doing, which, to be very clear now, it's becoming increasingly obvious, involves Americans.
Yeah, I mean, Americans, Europeans, people in Brussels, the EU, at the head offices at the EU, Republicans, Democrats, that's the problem. Everyone probably made so much bank, so much money out of Ukraine. That is the problem.
Absolutely. But can I just say again, I mean, you know, clearly there is an investigation, or was an investigation, let's use the past tense, in Ukraine of Burisma. But if there's all kinds of financial misappropriations of money, of tax dollars, for example, then this clearly involves the United States. And it seems to me that it is perfectly appropriate for the US authorities, the US federal authorities, the Justice Department and the FBI to come along and ask Hunter Biden and Joe Biden questions. After all, they asked Michael Flynn questions about a telephone conversation with a Russian ambassador, which James Comey, we now know, told the president of the United States, Barack Obama, was legit. So there are no grounds to interview him. Why not interview more important people? I mean, you know, Joe Biden was the vice president. Hunter Biden was his son. Why not interview them about activities which on their face do not look legit and involve the misappropriation, or possible misappropriation. I say possible, I use the word possible in inverted commas, the possible misappropriation of US tax dollars. I'd have thought there is an obvious case to investigate here. And, you know, please let it happen. I'm not holding my breath.
That's why they're all pushing for Biden. That's why, because there's so much dirt in places like Ukraine, so much dirt, that you know what, if Biden were to win in November, not only is all of this stuff just going to be wiped away, but these guys are so arrogant and they're so corrupt that they're going to ramp up
of course they are the
laundering schemes in Ukraine to steroid levels. And that means, of course, conflict with Russia, whatever they have to do to get money in there, to bankrupt the country, get more aid in there, more IMF loans, more EU loans, more U.S. taxpayer loans. $45 billion was dumped into Ukraine. Everybody in Europe and the U.S., if Biden wins, it's going to be $345 billion that's going to go into Ukraine. Believe me, they're not going to stop if Biden wins. That's no doubt about it.
In and straight out again. Exactly. This is I mean, they will develop a sense of impunity. They will feel that they can do all of this and that they really are above the law. And they will do it more blatantly and more obviously, and they will break more rules and they will break more laws, and worse things will happen, far worse things will happen, because they feel they can. They feel they can, and that there is no real comeback against them, because they will make absolutely sure also that there's never going to be a president in the United States who will want to have that investigated in the way that possibly, apparently, Donald Trump does. Yeah. So that's what this is all about.
Yeah, and the people in Ukraine are going to suffer, the everyday people, and that's the sad part about it. There'll probably be more conflict there too. So
correct. Anyway. Absolutely.
All right. Family of American spy imprisoned in Russia expects trade. That's from the Moscow Times. The brother of the American sentenced by a Russian court to 16 years in prison for espionage said Tuesday he believes Moscow wants to exchange him for a notorious arms dealer of Russian diplomatic properties shuttered by Washington. David Whelan, the brother of Paul Whelan, the ex-Marine, given the stiff prison sentence on Monday, said his brother was no spy and that Moscow arrested him as leverage against Washington. The Russians have publicly mentioned getting the United States to release arms trader Victor Bout, known as the Merchant of Death, for supplying diverse rebel groups and alleged drug smuggler Konstantin Yaroshenko from a U.S. prison, Whelan said. I have to note that the Moscow Times is 1,000% very, very anti-Putin. So keep that in mind as I'm reading this from the Moscow Times. But anyway, they provide some context to the story, Alexander.
They do. And I would point out, though, that, you know, the talk about the trading Whelan from for Russians held in the United States is also being discussed in other sections of the Russian media, including TASS, which is the official Russian news agency. So this is almost certainly what is coming. And in fact, Whelan's legal team in Russia have decided not to appeal his conviction, which I find interesting, by the way, but they've decided not to appeal it because they expect, apparently, that he will be swapped very soon. And I'm sure that's what's going to happen. Was he a spy? Wasn't he a spy? I don't know. There are American spies in Russia. I'm not going to guess one way or the other. What I would say is this was, of course, a closed trial. It was all conducted in secret. That's not so unusual. Trials of genuine spies are often conducted in secret. Certainly they are in Britain. But we don't know the case against him. And since I don't know the case against him, I'm going to continue to refer to him as an alleged spy, because I don't know one way or the other whether he was a spy or not. But I fully expect that he will be in the United States before this year is out. And I'm pretty sure that various Russians will be exchanged for him. And I've no doubt, I mean, it may be Victor Bout and it may be this other person, Yaroshenko. Victor Bout, by the way, is an interesting person. Some of us, some of our viewers may have seen a film called A Lord of War, I think it's called.
Lord of War, yeah.
Yeah, and which is loosely based on the American version of what Victor Bout got up to, in which he's, you know, this prominent arms dealer who's used by the Kremlin to send arms all around the world in, you know, various, aviation, a kind of aviation, private aviation company that he was running. I should say that he vigorously denies all of that. And just as I'm going to call Whelan an alleged spy, purely out of balance, I'm going to call Bout an alleged arms dealer. I know a little bit more about his case, and I would say that I think that it was a lot, it's more shaky than the official version says. But, you know, again, there may be things that are known about Bout which we don't really know the full story. So I'm not going to jump to any conclusions, but I don't believe Whelan is going to be in Russia for very long. I don't think, I am sure he's going to be back in the United States. And I suspect that it is Bout and various others who will be in Russia. And we will see a swap. Spy swaps or prisoner swaps between the superpowers used to be very common during the Cold War. They basically came to an end after the Cold War ended. We're now, it seems, back in a renewed Cold War, and they have come back. And given that the United States has been, you know, plucking people around the world, Russians around the world, Bout was arrested in Thailand, by the way. He was seized in Thailand and taken from there to the United States. And there were legal issues about that also. I mean, you know, why were the Thais arresting him and handing him over to the United States when it didn't seem as if he'd broken any Thai laws. But, you know, if the United States comes after Russians, I think the Russians are saying, well, in that case, you know, we are ready to come after Americans. And if you pin spy allegations against our citizens, we can do the same.
Yeah. Well, if you're American living in Russia, be careful. I'm just kidding.
Well, no. I mean, I'm going to say something else. I mean, you know, I don't think.
Just joking.
Yes, I don't think these people are taken at random. I mean, I don't know the stories about. I don't know the background of Paul Whelan. I don't know the background of Victor Bout, but I would be surprised if in either case they are, as clean as the driven snow, as we say in England. So I'm sure there's something
Was
there.
Whelan the guy, real quick before we close out, was Whelan the guy at the Metropole Hotel who
He
was
was.
at, I believe he said he was at a wedding and they caught a USB or something on him. That's the Whelan that's the story?
That's the man
Okay.
we're talking about. That's the man we're talking about. That's
Yeah. So
exactly.
he was I don't was he living in Russia or was he visiting for a wedding? It was something like that. I forgot. It was like three
I
years
did.
ago,
Yes.
4 years
He
ago.
was there for quite a long time. So I mean,
Yeah. He would make long trips.
yeah, he
Like,
would make
yeah.
long trips. I mean, I'm going to just say something quickly about this. What happened, if you remember, was that in 2017, in retaliation, in belated retaliation for the fact that the US expelled lots of Russian diplomats, the Russians countered by expelling large numbers of American diplomats. I mean, hundreds of them. And that is supposed to have severely undermined the US intelligence operation in Russia. And there was some speculation, I stress again, speculation, that what the US was having to do was to send people like Whelan, I'm not saying Whelan, but people like Whelan from outside to try to sort of keep some kind of intelligence operation going. And that, of course, that meant that he went to Russia without diplomatic protection and diplomatic immunity. And when he was caught, as he was easily caught, apparently, it's all allegations or rumors even, it made it much easier for the Russians to seize him. So that's the background story. I stress again, these allegations, I don't know the full facts. The case was conducted in secret. Secret trials are not unknown in either the United States or Britain or Russia. We should not draw conclusions from this, but for what it's worth, I think he probably has. There's more background behind him than that he was completely innocent. And I suspect the same is true of Victor Bout also.
Fascinating story, really
Always.
fascinating. It's interesting how all the dots are connected. The US expels the Russian diplomats, the
No.
Russians retaliate and expel the American diplomats who were working under diplomatic immunity, but were also providing a lot of intelligence, but were protected. And so the US is forced to send quote unquote civilian type people to Russia who are exposed and
Exactly.
end up in these types of situations. It's
Exactly, sir. I mean, can I just say, I mean, it's part of the spy game, which always goes on. And, intelligence agencies are always maneuvering to gain leverage over each other. What I do think has happened is that since 2014, because intelligence agencies can be both adversarial, but they can communicate with each other in certain ways too. What has happened is the communications have apparently broken down. So doing a spy swap also is a way of re-establishing communications so that the FSB and the SVR, the two Russian intelligence agencies, the FSB is the counterintelligence, SVR is the political intelligence, the people who send out the spies, much more than the GRU, by the way. We'll talk about Russian agencies at some other time. And the CIA and the FBI can start talking to each other again, and that would be a good thing.
All right, we'll leave it there. Go to the Duran Shop, guys. Pick up some merchandise. Donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribe Star. That's it.
That's it.
All right, take care.